This is Dr. Peter Ravens. I'm an emeritus professor of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, Maryland. And I have had focused my career on geriatric psychiatry, including caring for people with Alzheimer's disease.
Talking today with Dr. Peter Ravens about his latest book, Is It Alzheimer's? 101 Answers to Your Most Pressing Questions About Memory Loss and Dementia. First of all, Doctor, why did you write Is It Alzheimer's after writing The 36-Hour Day?
The 36-Hour Day is a very complete book. It talks a lot, not just about the diseases that cause dementia, but about a third of the book focuses on how to care for people who are having the illness. This book, 101 Questions, is much more focused. I have given a lot of public talks over the years, and people always ask very good questions, actually. But the questions focus on different issues than are in the 36-hour day. So I wanted to give something that write something that was brief, to the point, and answer the questions that are in the front of people's minds.
I thought it was an excellent condensation, if that was what you were going for.
Well, that was part of it. As I said, you know, you can't cover everything in a short book, but I really did try to keep the information very pointed so that people could, if they had one question or three questions, read those questions in 10 minutes and get the answers.
Mm-hmm. Before we get to some of those questions and answers, do you believe, after all the work that you have done, that there has been an increase in Alzheimer's? A lot of people are talking about that it seems to be the case.
I don't think there's good evidence that the disease is becoming more frequent in the sense that you're more likely to get it now than 50 years ago. But what's happened is there's been a tremendous change in our population. Now, this is the first time in human history in our country that, for example, people on average live to age 80. So what has changed is that Alzheimer's disease is a very age-related illness. The older you are, the more likely you are to get it. And so the fact that there are many more older people than there used to be seems to be the main driver for it. I think the other change has been that we have recognized that the disease can start when people are younger. And I think 50 years ago, when a person developed memory problems, it was often not attributed to an illness like Alzheimer's disease. And we now know that it can start as early as people's 30s.
What is the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? A lot of people use them interchangeably.
Yes, and I would say that's the most common question I'm asked, so it's an important one. Dementia is an umbrella term. It refers to any disease that starts in adulthood, impairs two aspects of thinking, two or more aspects of thinking, also impairs how people function in daily life, but does not affect how alert they are. So it's a very broad term. About 100 diseases are under that umbrella, and it just happens that the most common is Alzheimer's. So Alzheimer's disease is one specific cause of dementia, but there are about 100 others.
And this, I'm sure, is an often asked question. What is the difference between having a so-called senior moment and actual dementia symptoms?
You're right. That's probably the second most asked question. And again, as people, as we become older as a nation and as a world, those so-called senior moments are more common in people. Being unable to come up with a word or misplacing an object seems to be a change that occurs gradually, but is an aspect of normal aging. We don't understand why that happens, but it does not affect how people live. And most of the time, if people don't put pressure on themselves, the name or the word will pop into their heads. Yeah. So that seems to be normal aging. People should worry when they are having trouble remembering recently learned information repeatedly. So, again, some people are a little forgetful all their lives and have to check a calendar all the time to know when there are appointments. But if they start forgetting things that they've almost always remembered, or conversations or important events. Somebody got married last weekend and they don't remember attending the wedding. That's more serious, and that's when people should see a doctor to be evaluated.
This also, if a person is asking the same thing over and over again within a few minutes, is that cause for alarm or to get them checked out?
Absolutely. Again, if that happens very occasionally and the person only repeats a question once, that's not such a big issue. But people who are having memory problems don't remember that they asked the question a few minutes ago, and so they'll ask it three or four times. So two times, an occasional event, probably not necessary to worry about it. But if it's any more than that, people should definitely seek evaluation right away.
If someone is showing some distressing signs, but they seem to not notice it, and the people directly around them seem to be in denial, what can you say or do, or should you stay out of it until it worsens?
Yeah, you know, that's it's a common problem, and it partly results from the fact that about two-thirds of people who have Alzheimer's disease are totally unaware of it at the beginning of the illness. So, at least from my point of view, that lack of awareness in the person with the disease, in large part, not totally, but in large part, comes from the illness itself. And it sort of makes sense. If you have a bad memory, you have trouble monitoring things like your question a minute ago, asking the same question a few times. Yes. You don't remember that you asked it. So when someone says to that person, you know, you just asked me that, to the person, that doesn't mean anything. What do you do? I do think it's reasonable to say, you know, you've asked that question a few times, or I've noticed that you seem to be forgetting things. It'd be a good idea to be evaluated. If the person or their family says, no, I don't think it's anything to worry about, it's just normal, I would point out a few things to people. First, there are causes of dementia that can be treated. So it's not very common, but 1-2% of people who start having memory problems have something that can be fixed. It's a medication. It's low thyroid. There are a number of medical conditions that can impair people's thinking. But it turns out that medications probably now are the most common cause of treatable dementia. So that's one thing you can tell people. It's not necessarily untreatable. The second thing is that particularly to say to the families, you know, there's often a safety issue. People are doing things that maybe are becoming dangerous. They're at risk of being taken advantage of financially.
Yes. They
may be having trouble driving. Their judgment may be slightly off. So I think that's the second thing you can say to family members or loved ones of a person who's having problems. If you're a family member and you're trying to convince somebody to be evaluated, I think a good thing to do is to say, for example, Dad, would you do it for me? I'm worried. I'll feel so much better if the doctor agrees with you that you don't have a problem. Sometimes that takes the sting away from it, or makes people feel less defensive. So that's another thing that you can try.
I found your book, Is It Alzheimer's?, very helpful in that you actually, just as you just did with me now, give concrete things that you can say. And also, you mentioned about trial and error. Sometimes the first couple of things that you say or do may not work.
Absolutely. And, you know, what we just went through would be a good example. There are three or four or even more things that you might try to convince a person to be evaluated. Or, maybe you just wait a week and ask them again. And that's true for many of the challenges that come up in diseases like Alzheimer's disease, that the solution either isn't obvious, or you just can't quite think of or make a choice about what the best thing to do is. So my advice to people is try to be logical, use common sense, and try something. If that doesn't work, It's not a failure. It means that was the wrong strategy. Mm-hmm. Think of what would be the next most likely thing to work. One of the reasons that I recommend support groups to people is often they can get advice from other family members or other caregivers about things that have worked for them. And getting back to the 36-hour day, one of the things that we tried to do there was to be more encyclopedic and include many more things that you might try. So Is It Alzheimer's has some of that, but I tried to limit it to the very the most likely things to help. But there often are 5 or 6 or even 10 things to try. And it's really important to use common sense and trial and error and not to give up.
What steps could be taken to lower the risk of developing dementia?
It's an important one because these diseases are very common. You know, probably 11 or 12% of people over 65 have dementia, so that's pretty frequent. Mm. And obviously, it's a huge health cost. It's a very distressing illness for the person and their loved ones. And so it has many, many ramifications. And our biggest hope, really, in the long run, will be prevention. But it looks right now that the best things that people can do to either delay the onset or possibly prevent it, in the sense that you can prevent it for 10 or 15 years, you'll die of something else, mm-hmm. is to do the things that we consider heart healthy. So from a dietary point of view, minimize the amount of red meat, follow a so-called Mediterranean diet, more vegetables and fruits, avoiding red meat, using olive oil instead of other oils. I think there's reasonably good evidence that people who follow that develop the illness later. The second aspect of that is exercise. The CDC recommends, and I think it's, again, and it's good for your heart and probably your brain as well, is 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week of moderate exercise, walking. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to jog or lift weights, but moderate exercise, walking, being physically busy, for some reason seems to delay the onset of the disease. And we're actually starting to learn that one of the things that physical exercise does is increase the levels of chemicals in the brain that stimulate the growth of new nerve cells. Mm. So it actually, there's now a logic to it that seems to be turning out to be true. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing is to, again, and this is heart healthy as well as brain healthy, is to make sure that if you have high blood pressure or high blood lipids, that you address those. That there's now reasonably good evidence that lowering blood pressure, especially in midlife, lowers the risk of getting Alzheimer's disease. So those are three big things that people can do right now, and there's good evidence that they seem to delay the onset.
You also mentioned that it's somewhat radical kind of thinking to investigate the theory that you may have genes that could be triggered by some sort of environmental kind of trigger that could lead to Alzheimer's. Talk about that, if you would.
The genetics itself has changed radically in the past 20 years. The human genome, all the chemicals were first sort of identified specifically about 20 years ago now, a little less than 20 years.
Yes.
And that has led to a new understanding of how genetics works. We used to think, and many people were taught in school, that there are genes that are dominant and recessive, and you get each gene, you get a copy from your mother and your father. And it's that interaction of dominant and recessive genes that determines genetics. It turns out that things that are common, high blood pressure and diabetes and many conditions, including Alzheimer's, actually involve many genes. And sometimes each of those genes contributes just a small amount, maybe even less than 1% of the risk. So we're just learning how all this works. Alzheimer's disease is interesting in that the genetics is complicated. There is one form of Alzheimer's disease is caused by what's called a dominant gene, meaning if you inherit that genetic abnormality from one person, you will get the disease. That accounts for perhaps 1%, maybe 2% of all cases are these dominant genes.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who develop that, though, get the disease in their 40s, 50s, or even 60s. So these are the rare causes seem to be significantly genetic. However, there's one particular gene called the APOE gene, A-P-O-E gene. And this is a normal gene that we all have. And one form of this gene called the 4 form increases your risk of getting Alzheimer's disease by about 2.5 to 3 times. So that means that if someone's 80 years of age and they don't have that gene, they have about a 15% chance of getting Alzheimer's. And these are rough percentages.
Mm-hmm.
If you do have that gene, and again, it's a normal gene, your chances of getting Alzheimer's disease are about 35%. So it's greatly increased.
Mm-hmm.
However, what's intriguing is there are some people over the age of 100 who have 2 copies of this undesirable 4 gene, and yet they don't have Alzheimer's disease. So that means even though there's this significantly increased genetic risk, something either in the environment or possibly other genes, but it may well be both, are counteracting the genetic vulnerability. And I think that's maybe the greatest insight of this new genetics, is that we used to think things are either genetic or environmental. And it turns out that many things are an interaction between genes and environment. And Alzheimer's may be one of those, that there are protective things that we can do. That's the environment. There are things that increase the risk that maybe we can moderate in some way by environment. Perhaps someday we'll discover medications that can also moderate the genetic risk in the same way. So this is a whole new way to understand genetics. So our old-fashioned thinking, genes or environment,
mm-hmm.
nature or nurture,
mm-hmm.
seems to be wrong for almost everything that's common in medicine.
This has been fascinating. What would you like to mention as we conclude that would be important for our listeners to know?
I think the most important thing is that people are, in a sense, rightfully worried about Alzheimer's disease. It's a frightening condition. But I think it's important to know that even when people do have Alzheimer's disease, a lot can be done to make their lives better and can be done to help their families and their loved ones live a better life. And so I think getting an early diagnosis, taking the steps that one can take to moderate the severity of it, being informed, all those things can make life better. And I think that's a positive message that I hope people can go away with.
After reading your book, I thought I'd be pessimistic or down about it, but it really made me more optimistic. So I think if that was part of why you wrote the book, giving us all this this information in one place, I think you succeeded.
Oh, well, thank you, Pat. That was my goal. So I appreciate that input.
Well, thank you.